In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I go over the Sixers' easy win against the Oklahoma City Thunder, their dreadful performance against the Pelicans in the previous night, Furkan Korkmaz's big three-point shooting night, Ben Simmons' aggressiveness, and striking out in the buyout market. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletics Podcast Network. The backwards hat, Rich Hoffman. What would you say the percentage of the time that you wear a hat is it backwards?
Well, I have this one hat that I like. It's from my college Fordham that says FU on the back. It's very creative. But this is mainly the only one I wear backwards.
It also used to work for the Sixers home arena. I really miss the FU Center, or at least the naming of it. Still the same center, obviously. Now the Wells Fargo Center, which the team doesn't talk about, but long story. Anyway, how are you doing, Rich? I thought of your backwards hat because I was thinking of Ken Griffey Jr. the other day. Totally random tangent we're on now, but how you doing?
I'm good, man. I appreciate the comparison to Junior Griffey. That's cool. We're in the dog days of the season, by the way. Look, it's okay. I mean, like, it's not like last year, the dog days of the season were like, all right, they lost three games in a row again. What the hell is going on? And now it's like one bad performance and the sky is falling and they turn it around and they're okay. But it's, I don't know. I think the end of this season might not be the greatest basketball in the world. The one thing I will say is let's hope like Sixers are healthy. Their next seven games or so are pretty hard. They got Dallas, Brooklyn, Clips.
Two against Suns, Milwaukee. Yep.
Two against Milwaukee. That is like, it's probably it's definitely the hardest part of the rest of their schedule. But I don't know. I'm doing okay.
Complete tangents today. But the Sixers, a 117-93 win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. In a lot of ways, it felt like the Boston game where that game was over very quickly and it became very obvious that the Thunder did not have the horses to compete with the Sixers. Even if the Sixers were down Tobias Harris and Danny Green, you're laughing. Did I say something stupid?
No, they do have the horses to compete. They just kept them in the stable.
Well, that's true. That's true. The shorthanded, we will graciously call them shorthanded Oklahoma City Thunder. Yeah, I mean, look, there's Moses Brown has been a good story. Pokuševski, Maledon, who I liked a little bit coming into the draft, but I didn't expect he would be playing 30 minutes per night in his rookie season already. A lot of names that if you are not pretty much a NBA dork, you got a lot of introductions to last night. But the Sixers, even without Green and Harris, took care of business. Joel Embiid had probably his best game since coming back from the injury with 27 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 block shots. Ben Simmons was aggressive, especially early, which was nice to see. Got some comments from Joel Embiid, which I'm sure we'll get into. And Furkan Korkmaz was just, I mean, he was on fire from the perimeter, which is always good to see. And also 5 steals from the Corkster, which is not what you expect. Ended up with some good quotes from Cork about how he's trying to learn from Matisse Thybulle, which, quite frankly, Matisse does a lot of stuff that isn't really teachable. If Furkan starts trying to play defense like Matisse, he's just going to foul out in probably 6 minutes.
Would not go well.
No. But a good game, a bounce back game after an atrocious game the night before, but a good game nonetheless.
So we talked about, you know, back in January, how the Sixers were pretty grumpy after that Nuggets game that they had to play and some of the other tough situations when they were shorthanded. Well, guess what? This was a gift from the NBA schedule gods because, okay, this was the one game that got canceled for them. Yep. And early in the season, look, they could have went into Oklahoma City and won that game early in the season. Like, probably would have been, I don't know, a 50-50 chance. But if Al Horford was playing, you know what? Horford was not playing at that time. Embiid was also not scheduled to play on that trip. But you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You have Muscala. You have George Hill in the starting backcourt for the Thunder. They were actually okay with winning some games. Like, Sam Presti was still not trying to win games, but they had enough talent on the floor to be somewhat competitive. That game gets canceled.
Yeah.
You get Embiid back this time around, and they started, I believe, the youngest starting lineup in NBA history. They shot way above their heads. The Sixers shot way below what they did, and that game wasn't even close. Yeah. So, yeah. You mentioned Moses Brown, who, yeah, he has, you know, a lot of activity. I think that's a good signing for the Thunder, who, by the way, I'm kind of like shitting on them now. All those draft picks and a couple of these young guys hit, like, they're going to be pretty damn good 5 years from now, 6 years from now, or whatever.
So they're 2 years away from being 2 years away?
Yes, they are.
But like, people use that disparagingly, like that. They are very well positioned for sure.
And look, like, they're starting to lose some games now. I'm not sure they'll be able to drop, but man, if you could get into the top five of this year's draft, you get a Cunningham or a Suggs or a Mobley or somebody like that, you're already well on your way to skipping the middle portion. So credit to them. But right now, it's the process, and the process means you're going to lose a lot. And right. You have a guy like Moses Brown. Probably not like too unlike a Nerlens Noel back in the day, where, you know, he has some nice block totals, some nice rebounding totals in particular. He plays against Joel Embiid, no shot. And, you know, it was funny doubling from the baseline with Dort, who's a fun, young, good player. And at some point, Embiid realized, like, okay, I don't even have to pass against this. Like, I could just drive through the two of them and dunk the ball or lay it in,
yeah,
scoop shot it in. And then it was just one of those nights. And, yeah, I would say it was pretty necessary considering how bad the offense sucked the night before, one up. And, you know, you have Embiid after the game. He's, you know, remember a couple years ago when he had the mask in Miami? He is now officially complaining about that brace every night. And
every chance he gets, so, yep.
Yeah, I guess that's just part of his reality now.
Yeah. You mentioned the process. The Thunder's rebuild might end up with a Embiid and Simmons when they're done with it. It might even end up with a Durant and a Harden and a Westbrook when they're done with it. But it will result in a lot of wins for other teams in the intervening years. And the previous night, it was so weird because the Pelicans are a bad defensive team, just a real bad defensive team. The Sixers they were on the road, but they had two nights of rest. They had a relatively healthy, the only person out of the lineup was George Hill, and they just laid a complete egg. And Embiid looked bad, like he just looked flat out bad. He had some activity in the first quarter, and then it seemed like, Steven Adams, who's a big, strong guy, a tough matchup for Embiid, blocked his shot once or twice, and Embiid he was perfectly content launching those 15-footers, which weren't going in at all. You know, after the game, I looked it up, and 9 of his last 10 shots after the first quarter were outside of the paint. He got to the free throw line no times. That's just not a very Joel Embiid game. When you add in the fact that he's missing those jumpers, he had a poor performance overall. And there's nobody that really helped elevate a struggling Embiid. So to come back out and have that success in the following night, and look, back-to-backs can be tough. And look, this is, like you said, this was they were beating up kids. And I had somebody in my mentions all last night screaming, oh, well, look how much better their offense looks. Well, yeah, first of all, you're comparing it to, and his point was that spacing improves without Tobias Harris. Well, first of all, you're comparing it against one of their two or three worst offensive games of the season, bar none.
Oh my God.
Not even close.
They're playing the Thunder.
And also, these are teenagers. Like, this barely counts. But they very much needed that win. That win and a Brooklyn loss pulls them back to tied with Brooklyn. They very much needed just a good performance. And now they have a chance to go out here and end this on a 3-1 road trip, which is, you know, even if some of the play wasn't great and even if some of the competition wasn't great, that is a good place to be.
Yeah, and you see Brooklyn who lays an egg on Saturday night primetime against the Lakers team that had nobody.
Yeah.
And they got killed by them. So I think it does go to show, as bad as the Sixers were on Friday night in New Orleans, like, that is going to happen to good teams, especially in this weird season. Yeah, I mean, come on. The spacing doesn't get better without Tobias. It was good, just overall getting Tobias and Danny, I think, was a good move getting Embiid out of there after three quarters was a good move as well. It's pretty funny yep. watching Joe against Steven Adams, right? Like Steven Adams, you wouldn't say defender in general, right?
No, but a good post defender and obviously a great rebounder.
And those are the two things you need against Embiid. Like yep. you just, and you know, you say those two attributes and I could just say, he's fucking huge. Like he's just a big guy.
He's fucking huge. Yeah.
Who is like, he's strong enough to match Joel when posts up. I agree though. He did settle a bit too much against Adams. And like, to be clear, those mid-range jumpers that Joe is missing pretty much everyone right now, for most of the season, he was making every yeah. one of them. Yep. Like those are good shots. And frankly, like if he's going to make them at that clip, I think that's good practice for the playoffs. And it certainly probably doesn't hurt him as much to,
those shots that we're complaining about right now are one of the major reasons, along with post passing, one of the major reasons he is having by far the best offensive season of his career. It's what he's built a lot of his success this year on is the mid-range game, the face-up game, and being able to pass out of that a little bit better. That being said, so yeah, like missing the shots made the shots look worse, but there's usually a mix in there of getting into the paint, taking someone off the dribble, posting up, and that just stopped in the latter stage of that game.
Yeah, and you know, as good as Steven Adams is with the strength and everything, Joe could put fouls on him in a hurry too. I mean, come on, like he could. It's just if he's aggressive enough, and for some reason, he was not. Now, to be fair to him, in that Friday game, that was a fun one, just because like wow, everybody was pretty bad on offense.
Yep,
and that's just what it was. You know, Tobias was bad, Ben was bad, Seth didn't make a shot. Like the bench was okay. They made a few shots, but yeah.
No, I mean the outside of like Danny Green had an acceptable night. And acceptable, I think he made like 2 threes and had 8 points. And that's it's not the supernova Danny Green that we'd been seeing, but that's a pretty typical Danny Green career night. By career, I mean typical of his career, not the best night of his career. But outside of that, everyone, and Tobias in the second half made some stuff happen. But when you have Embiid just completely settling, and again, the real takeaway there, going to the free throw line 0 times for 3 quarters just never happens for Embiid. When you have Embiid not playing up to his normal self, Simmons completely disinterested offensively in half court, and Seth with an offer, it was just very frustrating. A very frustrating game to watch. But
this episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And I think you're just going to have to accept that Seth won out of every, I don't know, 12, 13 games. Like, he's going to go scoreless. He's just going to have a night where he takes like 6 or 7 shots and none of them go in. And that's what you have to live with. But yeah, good bounce back game last night. Cork, obviously, he has never had 5 steals in his career before. That's something that's different. He, I mean, he blew up a couple of dribble handoffs and just sprinted down the floor for dunks, which is just like, I was thinking like, oh man, this is like practice style defense against these guys. Like, you know, maybe Sam Presti was watching that and thinking like, finally, I have found a way to tank enough when I see Cork Moss blowing up our stuff on offense. We finally reached perfect tanking level right now. It's funny. Like, I don't think Cork is going to be a part of the playoff rotation, in part because his defense is good enough. But, you know, good for him that, like, on nights when the team is shorthanded, and like you said, rare Tobias and Danny night off. Danny, I think, had played every game of the season so far.
Yeah.
He steps in and he's fine. Like, you know, as long as you're not playing, like, a great opponent, and even if you are playing a great opponent, like if you play him with Simmons and Embiid, it just feels a much better player, which I think is true of a lot of guys, but he's fine out there. And that's, like you said, after the game, he's a quote machine. I think he was like, didn't he say like somebody's defense is through the roof or something like that?
Yeah, but I think he said like above the roof or something. There's something lost in translation. I forget exactly how he phrased it. He also admitted that, you know, somebody asked him like, hey, when George Hill comes in, you know, there's a chance one of you guys could be out of the rotation. Is that something you think about when you have an opportunity like you did to start? And he just came out and was like, yeah, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think about it, which I appreciate the honesty there. And then also on, you know, what he can take away from Matisse Thybulle's defense. Here's a quote from Furk on it. There's a lot of guys in this league that can play really good defense, but Matisse, he doesn't let you get that shot off. That's the weird thing. He makes you pissed off every time, which is just, it's true, but it's a great way of phrasing it. So yeah, he was a quote machine. I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, with him and Matisse starting, that he did feel some pressure because he knows the rotation could shrink, especially when you get the playoffs and especially when you add George Hill. Look, when Furkan's game is, when his shot is going in, I love watching that guy play. I like the movement. I like the quick trigger. I like, he's got just enough creativity where he can get himself into trouble, but he does have enough where he can make use of, you know, closeouts to attack. And the Sixers just need that sort of high volume, doesn't give a shit 3-point shooter. And he is the closest they have. He is the closest they have to a bomber that they can grow outside of Seth. And Seth, for a variety of reasons, passes up more shots than he should.
Ugh, that, honestly, like, easy win in that game against Oklahoma City. Seth is passing up threes left and right in that game. And I'm just thinking, like, man, yeah, this is getting on my nerves. Yeah, it's funny. It feels like Cork has grown up. You know, now, remember a couple years ago when he made the infamous trade request? I think some people forget that because it was... I believe it was Keith Pompey was just in some random city. It was like a Sunday game, and Korkmaz told him that he wanted to be traded. So, you know, that doesn't exactly make it on the jump or anything like that, that news. I'm not sure it even would make it on, like, Reddit. Maybe Sixers Reddit, it would make it on.
I think we might have, like, briefly mentioned it on a podcast.
Maybe. So, yeah, but it's funny, like, when that... I don't know. I feel like I just remembered that a couple weeks ago and was like, oh yeah, like Furkan asked to be traded. He asked to be traded when he was terrible. Like when he
was shooting 32%.
When I wasn't sure there was a place for him in the NBA at all. And, you know, I'm not sure he's playoff rotation, you know, when you have to push all of your chips in and you have George Hill healthy and all of those things, but he's definitely an NBA player. Yep. And, you know, despite like a slightly worse shooting season this year, and look at him, he's like being mature about it. He's like, yeah, I'm fighting for, you know, my minutes, but this is my livelihood. So it's been good to see. I mean, still very young guy. He definitely makes me laugh, so that's good.
All right, so the Sixers signed Anthony Tolliver, a longtime veteran, 6'8" forward, combo forward, center, has grown into a pretty respectable 3-point shooter. Over in his career, he is now 35. He will be 36 here in, I think, about a month and a half. So, and hasn't been playing basketball this year. I signed him to a 10-day contract with the spot that they created when they waived Ignas Berzikas. Get that name right? It's close enough.
Doesn't matter anymore.
He played one game for the Sixers anyway. Iggy 2.0 RIP. So I guess... take a step back, because now this is who, barring something really unexpected, somebody else getting waived. The one guy I would have interest in that was waived is Darius Miller, but he's not a big. So the situation that we're looking at in terms of solving the backup center minutes is complete. Where do you think they go? First of all, do you expect anything out of Tolliver? And where do they go from here? And if you looked at Doc's quotes, he was asked about it last night, but he was pretty candid, like, what do you want me to do? Bench Tobias? And it's like, no, the minutes I think most fans are asking for are the other power forward you've got on your roster. And then he sort of downplayed. He's like, look, we're just happy to have Tolliver around. Something of that sort. I should have the exact quotes here, but I don't. But it doesn't sound like the immediate... And easiest explanation is usually right. If they thought he was a solution to the Mike Scott problem, they would assign him to a rest of season contract. They just want to see what he looks like. But expectations for Tolliver, and what in the heck do they do when Joel is out of the game?
I don't have high expectations for Tolliver just because Doc was asked about, you know, like you said, is he going to get minutes? And Doc was basically like, no, maybe not any that really matter. That was the general gist of what he was saying. By the way, good Doc weekend. Don't want to get on this tangent too much, but after the New Orleans loss, I mean, that guy says we sucked after a game. I mean, he called him
better than any coach I've ever seen.
He called him mentally weak. It was great. Anyway, but of course he's fine the next night. Yeah, he said that, you know, they just wanted his 3-point shooting and veteran-ness. And, you know, I don't think he really even needed to say that to judge how much he's going to fit into the plans, because like you said, like, it's a 10-day contract. It's not a big deal. I would like to see him get Mike Scott's minutes. Mike Scott has been, you know, he did shoot well in last night's game, but man, he has just not been good enough to be putting on the floor. And to me, the bigger deal with this is that they didn't sign the stretch five that we have been clamoring for. Yeah, and they're going to have to go to the playoffs, and they have Dwight Howard, and then really that's it. You know, they could play Ben Simmons in a small ball look. Maybe the addition of George Hill can find more switching, but I don't really see anything else except Dwight Howard at the five or Ben Simmons slash, I mean, I guess you could put Mike Scott and Tolliver at the five, like theoretically, if you signed him to a longer contract. But again, these options are not inspiring at all. And they're going to have to sign them. They're going to have to do this with what they have. I think you mentioned this before, but I like this. There is a decent chance that Dwight Howard, who, despite his ridiculousness and his crazy goaltends, and he had a very funny backcourt violation last night. Despite his craziness, like, I think overall has been a positive backup center for this team.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, his numbers have been weighed down because they keep playing him with Ben, which just doesn't work. There is a chance that Dwight Howard becomes Montrezl Harrell 2.0 this year, where Doc continues to play him and then they don't have an answer. Maybe they find another way to do it with Ben and the other group. But look, our position on this is really clear. I think this is a major weak spot. I think it's something that they should have been able to upgrade better, and they didn't. So, you know, again, like, it's only 10 minutes a game, but I am pretty concerned about how that's going to go.
As you said on our podcast last week, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest concern, this is a concern level 15 for 10 minutes a game. It's a pretty big concern. The numbers are atrocious. I do think, you know, when we get to the playoffs and you have a bunch of imperfect options, whether that's Mike Scott, maybe Tolliver, if they end up signing him for the rest of the season, any other kind of small ball configuration, I do worry that Doc is going to lean on and turn back to, the traditional center, the big physical, strong, defensive-minded center in Dwight Howard, and I don't know how you're going to reconcile that. You know, we brought up in the last podcast sort of like a small ball lineup when George Hill gets into the fold, and when you can put Simmons at center and Tobias Harris and Danny Green and Matisse Thybulle and George Hill and switch as much as you possibly can. I'm interested in seeing that. I would like to see Tolliver get a shot at some backup center minutes. Like, if you're going to sign him to a 10-day, give him 10 days to play. Like, you're chasing a one seed, and that's important, and pretty important for the Sixers. It would be great to be able to avoid one of those two teams in the second round. But it's not like your backup centers, you're not winning minutes when Joel's off the court anyway. So give it a shot.
It's not a safe option in general.
Right. So give him a shot. See if you can play. Evaluate him in that context. And I think he's going to have to get pretty creative. And, you know, that might end up meaning tying Simmons and Embiid at the hip minutes-wise and having Tobias run that unit with Dwight if you do have to go with Dwight as backup center. I'm not 100% sure that you are going to remain competitive defensively depending on how the other team staggers their rotation. George Hill might help with that. But, yeah, when you get Hill in here and now when you have Tolliver, try some options because going back to what has been tried so far this season just isn't working.
Yeah, it's...
And I do think the numbers with Harris instead of Simmons with Howard and the bench unit has been better. I'd have to double check that, but at least it was throughout the first half of the season.
It was, but it was on the strength of good defense, which it's like, which feels, I'm not sure that's going
to. I agree. That's why I think adding Hill in there might help a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah.
It did feel fluky, to your point.
Yeah, I don't know what they do. It's a tough situation, too, because they are chasing the one seed, and they should get that one seed. Like, that would be a huge deal, man. They could play the freaking Hornets in the second round or the Hawks. Like, that would be a massive deal. But they also have to experiment with this group because now they do not have the plug-and-play option that just makes sense right away on paper for Doc. So, yeah, they're going to have to get creative. Like, look, it doesn't have to be Monday against Dallas, but they need to start trying these lineups. They need to play it 10 minutes a game. They need to know when to switch with these small ball groups because the Simmons and Dwight numbers, they're just we can't say this enough. They're terrible. They keep getting worse every time they play. It's amazing. Yep. I think they're minus 14 per 100 possessions. You can't play that in a playoff series against
the team. It was negative 10 just like a week or two ago. Yeah, it's been bad. And on the one hand, they need to experiment to find a better solution. On the other hand, I'd like to see them sort of get their set rotations and some consistency in there too. So it's they have competing priorities here, which are both legitimate. And it would be great to get Hill in here as soon as possible, because then you can experiment now and then use the final 3 weeks of the season to fine tune that and get into sort of like a rhythm and a knowledge of what every night is going to look like. They're in a good spot. They're a good team. They're a very good team with an MVP candidate who needs to get back into MVP form. And by that, I don't even really mean conditioning. I just mean like getting back just into like
making all of the shots like an MVP would.
Yeah. And looking a little more comfortable on the court.
Yeah.
I wonder how long he's going to need that brace because like you said, he complains about that every chance he gets. And look, I get it. Like, I'm sure it's not comfortable to play in. But I wonder how long is that going to be something he's going to have on throughout the playoffs, or is that going to come off before we get there? I don't know.
Doc did say after last night's game that he thought it would only be a couple more weeks. So
he wasn't
like guaranteeing it, but it does sound like Doc brought it up even before Joe did. So it's clear that he's like walking back to the huddle and Doc's like trying to draw up a play and Joel's like, this brace sucks. Like
Doc, I'm taking it off. I'm taking it off.
No, you're not. We're going to run a post up for you now. He's like, well, I'm going to miss the shot because this brace sucks. It is very clear. Like, Doc is very aware that Joe is not liking this brace whatsoever. But
well, if Joe is offering that information so readily to you and I, almost unprompted, I'm sure he's not quiet about it behind closed doors. I'm sure about that. All right. Anything else you want to really bring up? These were two sort of like blah games. One of them they played shitty and the other team they played a shitty team. So not a whole lot to go off of here, but any other overriding thoughts on the team?
It is funny that Embiid, even when he's not even trying to, is just brutally honest about Simmons.
Yeah. There, I'll pull up those quotes here. I got them here.
The main point.
He was asked whether he'd like to see Ben be more aggressive as a scorer. And he started off, oh, yeah, for sure. Look, I want him to be aggressive every single game. Whether that's to make plays or whether to look for his shot, he's got to be aggressive. He's got to make guys on the other team guard him. He then went on to say he's a playmaker and he wants to be a playmaker and he wants to get everybody involved. But at times you need to just be aggressive and make the guys on other teams guard him. He then went on to say, like tonight, we saw it. I was really excited when he made those two shots. And by those, he's referring to the jumpers. He's starting to be comfortable. He's getting back to where he was right before the All-Star break. So he's got to keep doing that. You know, on the one hand, you know, he started the quote off saying, yeah, we need Joe to be more aggressive, not just as a playmaker, but also as a scorer. So the other team guards him. He then seemed like he tried to walk it back and be a little more supportive and say, oh, well, he's getting back to where he was. Well, it's really not. It was just one game. Before that, he was completely passive as well.
It's 2 8-to-10-foot jumpers.
Yeah. So I think Embiid sort of tried to offer a little bit of support and a little bit of encouragement. But yeah. Then they do need him to be more aggressive. Like, the Sixers are better when Ben is aggressive and take advantage of his mismatches. That will result in some driving kicks, yes. But he's got to be a little more aggressive as a scorer to really force those rotations. And that's a lot of it isn't just, you know, Doc says it all the time, and the pushback I always have when he's like, oh, well, I just want him to play basketball and be a setup man. Well, the offense isn't playing all that great. So you need him to be more like there's room for improvement. And when Ben can get the other team, it's not just the points Ben scores, it's the rotations that he forces. When Ben can force the other team to rotate more and the other team is scared of him as a scorer, it will open up passing lanes and scoring opportunities for his teammates. Like, it's not an either or.
If every game was like the Oklahoma City game, then I could deal with whatever, 13 points and 5 assists or whatever, because they're getting wide open shots
right
the entire night. But that's not the case against good defense. It's not even the case against Oklahoma City. Like, Ben has nothing at the end of games. Some of it is a lack of aggressiveness. I think, like, he could just put his head down and draw more fouls. And some of it is just that he is a limited offensive player. He does not have a lot in his bag. He's got hook shots
aren't good. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's got hook shots that don't go in. He does not have a jump shot. He is, he doesn't have, like, a variety of kind of foul drawing moves like Embiid would on the drive. Like, I think some of it is not being aggressive enough. Some of it, I just don't think he's very good at drawing fouls. So when you have this limited playing style, and by the way, like, throughout these games, you do see, like Dort had one or maybe two steals in last night's game where, Ben's in the dunker spot and it's just an easy rotation to make. And you're like, you have a Joe post up and you're basically running your guy into Joe. And that's like, that is just something they're going to have to work around. And Ben is going to have to work around it by being more aggressive. But yeah, like, Joe, he was not really trying to even hurt his feelings, I would say. But the key there is he needs somebody to guard him.
No, I think Joe is trying to be supportive while adding a little bit of encouragement and pressure.
But that is like a brutal sentiment. Like, that is a brutally honest sentiment.
Yeah.
Hey, you're an all-star player. It's your fourth year. I've been through a lot with you. And by the way, like, make somebody guard you on the defensive end. Like, that is that is just a fundamental basketball thing that is, I think, entirely true, by the way. It the gulf between Ben's offense and defense at the end of that New Orleans game.
It's amazing.
He was doing the Dame Lillard thing where he's picking up Brandon Ingram 35 feet from the hoop and just embarrassing him. Like, he just, like, Brandon Ingram barely getting a shot up at the free throw line when he turns up the defense to 100. But offensively, he's got nothing. He's giving it all back. So,
well, that's the thing. He's one aggressive MF-er on the defensive side of the court late in games. It is weird. And, like, you've got people that are like, oh, well, here we go. This is why every time he has a good spell and a bad spell, I don't really care anymore. Like, yeah, he had that month in the middle of the season where he was aggressive. Okay, but let's see what happens when he struggles, when he hits a rough patch. But when he hits these horrible patches, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to freak out either because I know he's going to eventually get back to, like, at the end of the year, he's going to hit the back of his baseball card. And that's just who he is offensively. And it's, I've got people who are like, well, why are we always talking about how other players fit with Ben? Well, because he's got these massive weaknesses and they're not going to just go away. And if I get mad at him, they're not going to go away. So you have to make decisions and roster moves that complement what he does and doesn't do. Unless you get to the point where you move him, but they're not at that point. And he's still a really good player. It would be malpractice to not say, how does every piece fit with Ben Simmons right now? You have to, because he's so unique. He's so, they're one of one. There's only one Ben Simmons in the sport. There's really probably only one Ben Simmons in the history of the sport, as unique of a player as I've ever seen. You do have to be very, and this is a big part of the Dwight Howard conversation, you have to be very careful and deliberate with each piece around him, because you need his defense. You need, quite frankly, his creativity and his shot creation, because you don't have a lot of creativity on the roster, but he has some massive limitations that you have to work around. It's so weird.
He's always had his up and down stretches for seasons. This has been ridiculous. This has been...
You had the beginning, which was as bad as he's probably ever played. The middle, which was as good as he's ever played.
Yeah.
And then here, where he's back to where he was in the beginning of the season. It is weird. And this is one thing with Doc, it is always interesting to me. And we always say, like, our whole thing has been coaching is overrated at times. Not inconsequential, but overrated because it's the easiest explanation for a lot of stuff. It is interesting how Doc gets a lot of credit for Tobias Harris having a career year, But whenever people talk about Ben Simmons' struggles, it's not, well, why isn't Doc getting more out of him?
Bingo.
And I think it is, there's some truth to it for both players. Like, I think one of the things that the previous coaching staff tried was to get Tobias outside of his comfort zone, to have him be more of a high volume 3-point shooter, to have him be more of a setup man in the half court, to run more pick, not more pick and roll, but have him more of as a, not just a scorer and a quick decision maker, but to use his scoring to try to set up other players. And I think that made the game, I think he ended up thinking too much through the game and not taking what his natural shots were as a byproduct. And, you know, I think Doc did a good job with Tobias in putting him back in that comfort zone, limiting his decision-making so he can make quicker decisions and getting shots that he is comfortable with. Well, on the other hand, he's not pushing Tobias outside of his comfort zone, but he's also not pushing Ben out of his comfort zone either. And I think that is, you know, you're seeing a good part of Doc's strategy where it works for Tobias. I'm not sure it works with Ben, and I don't know. Other people are like, well, how is Ben not the number one story all game, every game? Well, can you imagine if we spent every game talking about the same thing for 4 years straight? Like, these aren't new problems, but I can get why you're frustrated, because he's the most polarized. I really didn't mean to get on a 10-minute rant about Ben Simmons, because I love what he brings. I just wish you didn't have to work around so many deficiencies so often.
It is so true, though, you know, with my friends and some of the people, you know, on Twitter. When the Sixers do well on a road trip, it's, thank God Brett Brown's not here. You know, Doc, we have a real coach now. Well, guess what? Doc Rivers has presided over two of the worst stretches of Ben Simmons' career. He has never been this bad. So if you credit one thing, you kind of have to credit the other. I don't know. It does affirm our point, though, that, like, I don't think this is Doc Rivers' fault for the most part. Like, I think this is Ben Simmons just needs to be better individually as a player.
Yeah, he needs grow his skill base. Hopefully when that happens, he will become more confident. And when the two of those merge, he will be a more consistent half-court offensive player. But we haven't seen the growth in either of those, the skill set or the mentality. To where I get if you're frustrated after 4 years of non-development in this regard,
look, I'm just saying, like, we're having a conversation about it now. Like, the subtext is, like, the way he has played for 60% of the season is unacceptable. It's just not even close to good enough.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And look,
but I'm not going to spend 40 minutes on a podcast saying this is my point.
Yeah. There's only so much you can say at this point. Like, he is sort of who he is. And some of the criticisms are fair. Some of the defending is fair. He's the most unique player I've ever covered. It's really weird. Anyway, I think that is a good enough place to wrap it up. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.